and call us.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good morning. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Chombe. And it's that time of the early morning that we look at business, we look at economics, we look at global affairs and everything that affect our bread and butter. And, you know, every morning when you are waking up, making sure, we are always advising you to make sure that you look ahead. And in the situation that you find out that there is no motivation, understand that where you came from, it was more difficult, and there is still a journey ahead of you. And different thinkers indicate that, you know, life on its own is war. You have to fight, but you can't fight every battle. You need to be very picky. You need to be very picky. You cannot fight every battle because at the end of your empire, or the end of your being, is when you start fighting enemies, both sides. Sometimes you just need to look at things and also observe and move forward. And there are people who do not want to be strong, although there is a certain level of your strength. There are people who react on everything. You react on everything. Your neighbor spoke about you, you react. Your friend, apparently they say what about you. That is life, and that is what we have signed up for. As a human being, you have to deal with problems, but you need to know which one. An intelligent person, somebody who understand how to solve problems, but the wise person understand which problem to be solved, because not all the problems need your attention, because you have such less time when you realize that, and you have to understand that you have to prioritize. There are things that you have to prioritize, and there are just things that you have to look at them and realize that this one, you put it under the table while I'm moving forward. Because there is a saying to say, if you stop on every barking, you know, dog, then you will not reach your destination, because it's necessary to understand that we need to prioritize. That's why it's quite important to understand and embrace challenges, because that is life we have signed for. Because life without challenges, we become so boring. Because if you look at, you know, there was one thing I was reading, whether it's a fact or it's not a fact, it's a reflect the human, you know, existence. To say, there's a certain individual who, his parents were so powerful and rich. And when he was in class, every time he just become number one. And he also become so confused and become so, and things become so boring. That when you're always number one, when you're always treated well, when people are speaking about their stories of struggle, you did not build that resilience too. Because they are saying, do not pray for smooth life, pray for strength, that you can move, become strong and overcome all those things. So today the conversation extend to investment guide. The conversation is extended to Namibia investment landscape. And from the hour of 7 there, we'll be in the conversation with Dwight Links, especially when he is going to speak about what is new in the document, what is new, what did investment have done for us. And also, when we speak about investment, are we just speaking about ourselves, or we are also speaking about an investor? Because in a greater understanding of an investor, investor is just another form of a business person who, apart from assisting you, is also making money. It's not an aid, it's an investment, which means that a person is aiming to make profit. That's why the moment we understand that from the other ground, then we see where we are going to meet our investors. And and when we are going to have this discussion with Dwight, especially looking at investment guide, it's quite very important also to look at the background from your own analysis to say, what did investors do? What is that thing that investors have done for us for the past 36 years? Because, as I indicated on the 21st of this March, Namibia is going to graduate from being a youth to be an early adult. And based on that perspective, Namibia is going to be 36 years. And in a broader definition, we are no more young as a country. We are graduating to adulthood. But we're going to look at for the past 36 years, what is that we can really say, this is what investors have done for us. This is a greatest foreign direct investment. This is a greatest domestic investment. And when you look at that investment guide, we can also come to the concept of who is an investor. At what financial threshold can you be called investor? And what are new things? Are the policies, favorable for investors in Namibia? Because you know what is very interesting is that we think we have moved so far, especially from last year. We may have shown some improvement, especially with domestic initiatives and projects. But one thing which is very clear is that when it comes to Namibian policies and legal framework, we have not moved yet. We have not moved yet. When it's coming to Namibian policies and legal framework, we have not moved yet, because what was discussed at the public-private sector forum, for example, in last year, is still not yet implemented. Maybe 1% of it is implemented. We just discuss problems. We understand problems. We have discussed this before. But last year, 2 days meeting with the president, where the president met the public sector and the private sector in the same room. It was a content-based meeting, but are we implementing the strategies or the proposal of public-private sector forum? That is the communication that we need to look into. And when you are looking at the documents, we must always ask ourselves a question to say, what is new? What are you going to do differently? What will happen after that? What are the analysts saying about the Namibian documents and policies? What is new? Because it must not shock us if little to nothing have changed moving forward, if we are not applying a different formula on guiding this. Because documents have been presented, we have more documents than you can imagine. And some of these documents, they become so expensive in production, in producing and planning about them. But what are we doing about an ordinary person? But that conversation, we will extend it, especially from the hour of 7. For now, let us look at what is happening in the continent of Africa. We have been speaking about the Middle East. We have been speaking about the Middle East. However, the impact of the Middle East start to be seen in financial, disruption, in a very of finance. And if it has already started in Cairo, if it already started in Egypt, how long is it going to take for that to reach us? Because you don't need to have 20% of trade with Egypt to feel that impact. You just have to have a trade. And in that, one by one, step by step, it will definitely affect us, especially the war in the Middle East. And apart from yesterday, inauguration of Mochab Khamenei, the son of the late Ayatollah, and who is now the current supreme leader of Iran. Now, in his salutation, they have released more than 70 missiles to Israel, just to say we have inaugurated another one. And analysts are saying that it's a sign of resistance, it's a sign of defiance, and it's another blow to the Western world, and also to those who are fighting Iran, to say the war have just been extended. And there's a lot of players that are coming in every day. And Russia and China, they're indirectly involved in the technical know-how, especially in the sharing of intelligence. And it's also becoming not only interesting, but it's also becoming dangerous, especially in the Middle East. And U.S. have also just indicated that the war would last more than it has been expected. While on the other side, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, is also indicating that it could have lasted more than it has been expected. And it seems like when it comes to firepower, Iran continue to have a stockpile. We don't know for how long they are going to last, but they've shown resistance, and we'll see how things are going to happen. But the interest today is on the currency of Egypt. It was stated that Egypt currency plunged to historic low, billions in foreign funds exit. Stated that Egyptian pound fell on Sunday to its lowest level on records, dropping for the first time below 52 pounds to the US dollar on official market. The sharp depreciation come as foreign investors have stepped up their exit from Egypt local bonds market over the past week, one of the most volatile periods in regional economies that was seen. As war is pitting the United States and Israel against Iran continue to escalate, the bank screens in Cairo on Sunday showed the dollar buying at 52.15 Egyptian pounds and selling at 52.25 at major lenders, including Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank, Bank of Alexandria, and others. And it's indicated that this level drops around 4.3% in a single day. And understand that Egyptian economy is interlinked to the economy of the Middle East. It's part of the Arab Rig and part of the bigger players in the oil industry. And Egypt is I don't know how they tend their cut. Egypt is the greatest ally now of the U.S. And when it comes to the current happenings, Egypt is with the Arab world, so with Arab League, not with Iran. And understand that even in the fight, in the diplomatic fight between Egypt and Ethiopia, Egypt is the greatest ally of the U.S. And when the economy is falling, which is affecting both allies of the U.S. and allies of Iran, you'll be able to understand that this is already impacting the trade and the business of Egypt. And understand also that Egypt is one of the guests or have shown interest in joining Board of Peace. And it's also one of the developed countries, few developed countries and strong economies in Africa, because they've been fighting in terms of possession number one, in terms of industrialization with South Africa. But it seems like South Africa is a big guy. And when it comes to developed economies in Africa, South Africa is number one. And also Egypt is in the top five. But its economy is already hit, especially by the currents happening in the Middle East. And the war in the Middle East, if it's already affecting bigger economies, how long is it going to take for it to be felt by small economies such as Namibia? That is conversation, especially at the top of the northern part of Africa. Now, while we are looking at the Middle East, understand that either it's Nigeria, either it's Niger. I understand that, you know, jihadist, another militia. Jihadist, another militia are still in Africa. That is why, when you look at what happened in Niger, it's indicated that the Niger army repelled attack on the whole drone base and the military drone base at the airport of Niger. The military drone base at the airport of Niger, that is Dahoe, was targeted overnight on Sunday, and authorities indicated that the army have defended the base after unidentified assailants pulled up on motorbikes and they exchanged fire from the airport and the city center. And the drone base was built in 2022 from Niger Air Force, often operate in the area, which face jihadist attack normally through the city, and some of in the city of 100,000 residents is divided due to violence. The area is also home to a group of armed bandits, as well as smuggling routes of drugs. And jihadist violence has troubled Niger, especially violence that involve Islamic States, groups that are associated with Al-Qaeda and also other Islamic States militia. And that should really be a concern, because one should always come to the question of terrorism in Africa, to say, who is really funding terrorism in Africa? Why they are so coordinated to that extent that even the African Union cannot fight the terrorism on their own? What is the backbone of terrorism in Africa? Because if you look at the report of Interpol, you'll be scared that there is no area in Africa that there is no footprint of jihadists. If you look at the Interpol report 2025, you'll also be scared that there's no footprint in this, in either in Southern Africa, either it's East or Central or North. There's no footprint without jihadist. And when you listen to international relation analysts and also security analysts, particularly looking at the war and the economy, you realize that a terrorist is how you define it in some regions, they are called mercenaries. Some regions, they are called mercenaries. And looking at the open war that is fought now, you realize that a group, a militia such as the CAD force that was used in Iraq, was used in Syria. You realize to say sometimes terrorists is how you call it. Other people, they are calling them fighters or militias. And we'll be able to see that, you know, sometimes even the legitimate governments. That's why there was a discussion that even the CAD force that was supposed to be used to go on the ground of Iran, because people are scared of going on the ground of Iran. Even the CAD force, that is just a group of independent militia that was used by the U.S. in Syria and also in Iraq, particularly to be at the front line of war. They said, no, we are not going to go there. But you realize to say, really, sometimes it depends on how you define your allies. And you're looking at history. You realize that sometimes it depends on who is in charge, and it also depends on the narrative. But really, the issue of jihadists in Africa should really be a concern, because Nigeria also, the Tinubu government is still struggling to put down the jihadist. Even went to the point of paying, you know, ransoms so that you can get your people who are kidnapped back, even if there are indications to say there was no payment. But realize that you know, that is a concern. Then the question also that we should always ask is that, why do people join, militia groups? Who are these people? Why are they joining militia groups? It's the same question also we should ask to say, why do people become criminals? It's the same question that we should also ask to say, why do people end up ganging up against their own state that, brought them up? What is the cause of those things? And until we come to that conclusion, then we will not find a way on how to be, or counter-terrorism, especially in Africa. And lower economies, less development, has more attraction to these kinds of things, especially when it comes to instability. But one thing that you should credit, especially Southern Africa, we may be not having still a head of SADC political, but one thing that you should credit SADC is that SADC fought a lot of battles until the battle of DRC that is not yet solved. But other than that, you must really be able to think that still, by far, one of the peaceful regions compared to other parts of Africa, either is north, east, west, or central. But we get SADC. We must really thank for that, especially those who champion security. But that is not enough. That is not enough, because you still have some disruption here and there. And peace, especially if you look around the world, you realize to say, it's only in SADC that we are breathing. Other people are running. Other people are not talking. Other people are under the table. But that should really be maintained. For now, let us look at a short commercial break. Then we continue the conversation. And remember, from the hour of 7 there, I've been in conversation with Dwight Links, especially to speak about Namibia investment landscape, especially the recent launch of Namibia Investment Guide. And also to say, who are we guiding? And when we are guiding, are they getting the real map? Are they getting the real map? And are the investors really respecting Namibia domestic economies? Are the investors really? And what is the challenges of investors? And the other thing we should also, maybe, especially from the hour 7 there, that we should also ask is that, what posture are we giving to our investors? Are we giving our investors a united force, especially in doing businesses in Namibia? What postures are we presenting to our investors, either as domestic investors or foreign direct investors? Because when you come to that understanding, then we'll be able to find a way. And the other thing is also that, are our laws very clear? Are they well defined? Are they make it easier for our investors also to do businesses? And let us also not forget, the negative stories of investment. The negative stories of investment. What investors end up doing if they are not handled very well, if there is no transparency, if there is no professionalism. Because at some point there was an indication, one company was given an opportunity to explore. And you don't know either it's due to our labor inspectors untrained, or just did not have time, or we don't know if they're also part of that. Is that it was a shock of Namibia when a certain investor or a certain company was given an opportunity to do business in mining. And this guy, instead of following what he was given, especially in terms of the exploration license, the guy just started mining. And the people now, they were confused because they don't know for how long. And they also do not understand the chemical component of that mineral. And they say, no, we told you to explore. Why are you mining? No, I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry. But we don't know how that case was handled. And at this point in time, we cannot really afford to lose anything. not even a penny, because we have suffered enough and our people are in poverty, our people are sick, our people are suffering, our students, they have a dark future ahead of them, but we should not afford to lose anything. That's why the laws should apply, and ruthless to those who don't respect us. Honestly, especially if you play with our investment, if you play with our resources, at least those laws must be really be applied fully, and must teach people a lesson, especially those who come and look at the loopholes. And there's always an aspect of a middleman. Yes, and the middleman can be presenting himself or herself like somebody who assists, but you find a middleman who is really blocking other Namibians to get real investment. Because after every deal being done from foreign direct investment, there is always that middleman who is getting the 1%, which he thinks is enough, but it's a betrayal for the country. And that should not be tolerated moving forward. So let us look at a short commercial break, then we can come back short.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabu ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, vera hetatu natu, bali o hetatu hatatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any
of the early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, it's 44 minutes past the hour of 6, and you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And looking at that aspect, looking at that aspect, if you look at the United Nations, Now, as we indicate that the Secretary General of United Nations is going on retirement, especially at the end of this year. And one of the candidates is the former president of Senegal. But there is an indication to say Senegal is divided over the former president Macky Sall, candidacy for UN chief. It was stated that Macky Sall to succeed United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. That has brought a lot of division, especially when it comes to the politics of Senegal. You know, there is a saying to say the king would not be respected in his own kingdom. He will not be respected in his own kingdom. You know, Macky Sall has been a president of Senegal, the fourth president of Senegal from 2012 to 2024. And he previously served as an eighth prime minister of Senegal from 2004 to 2007. And he's showing his interest in taking over. Especially from Antonio Guterres. And looking at his background, he's a French educated man. He's a trained geologist and also geological engineer. And looking at that aspect, one must also be able to understand that, you know, when it comes to Africa, there's been quite a long time now without the candidate or without the Secretary General from Africa. Because if I have to look clearly, one I can remember, unless there is another one, it's only Kofi Annan from Ghana there. So Kofi Annan was SG of UN at one point. Oh, and there was also a guy from Egypt, was a professor of law. I think it's Boris Gari. But, you know, it seems like Africa still want to take over. But there is a division in terms of how Sall, Macky Sall, will be able to take over from the UN. The UN must not become, there is an indication here. It's an indication here, especially members of parliament of Senegal, indicate that the UN must not become a roundering place for blood crimes and economic crimes, say Marius Sanga, the former president of Senegal, Sari, not to take over or to partake in that candidacy. It's not yet, it's not the only one. There are other people who are showing interest. There are other people who are showing interest in taking over as UN Secretary General. And one should also ask to say, Namibia, where are our candidates? Why are we so quiet? You know, it has been a long we did not partake in. In international or in global diplomacy, particularly fielding our candidate. Some of the people from Namibia that you can recall, particularly taking highest position in global affairs. We have people such as, Kawanas was undersecretary for Africa. He was an international diplomat. And at some point, the late Theo Ben-Gurion was the president of United Nations General Assembly. And we can only count on We also had the representative at SACU. We are the former chair or secretary of SACU. Meme Lago there. And we founded the executive secretary for SADC. I think it's Tate Mbwende as the first executive secretary for SADC. But when it comes to UN chief, why can't we deploy our candidate too? Namibia must also partake. If it comes to World Bank, we also have educated people. If it comes to World Trade Organization, we must field our candidate too. It's a high time that we should also put ourselves out there. Even when there's a succession of UN chief, we must deploy our candidate. We have attempted Interpol presidency, but we must also deploy our candidate when it comes to international fora. We have a lot of qualified people, retired ministers, and also retired technocrats who have that stature. Why can't we deploy them to international institution? Maybe we can also have our influence too, and also represent Africa. We must deploy our people. Either is the presidents of Pan-African Parliament. Next time we must deploy. We can't just be the smallest country. We can't just play quiet diplomacy. We must also play influential role. And as we have been also influential in other areas such as inter-parliamentary forum. But we must really make sure that we deploy. That is what's happening. It's to say in Senegal they want to deploy the former president to become a UN Secretary General. But even people within the country, they are not supporting it. And you know, I don't know. Now is it really an internal problem, or is it really an African thing to say, if my brother is standing for a position, I should not support him? Why the fight is starting even from the internal? If a person is not getting home support, how is the person going to get support from the outside, if even the people from the country? And the question is it really a genuine counter argument, or it's just because a person, you know, a person? But let's hope the next Secretary General for United Nations will be coming from Africa, and let's hope things are going to change, because apart from doing something, having faith and also a positive visionary expectation can really be a good thing to say. Why can't this next Secretary General for UN come from Africa? And when is that agenda of calling for Africa to have a permanent seat in Security Council going to be realized? And for us not only to continue saying we want Africa to have a permanent seat in Security Council, we want country to defend us. We spoke about that from 2011. We spoke about that in 2015. We are speaking about it. And in the world where international laws become selectively implemented, the future of Africa, having a permanent seat in Security Council, is not yet very clear. But let's hope that will also be happening, especially moving forward. That is international institution. And looking at the Middle East, there's a lot of power play going in. It's not only about war, it's also about economic battle. And when you look at some of the communication, especially from the foreign minister of Iran, you realize to say it's more than a war, it's an economic battle ground. And Abbas Arachi, the current minister of foreign affairs of Iran, indicated that it's 9 days into the Operation Epic, and in the Operation Epic mistake, oil prices have doubled while all commodities are skyrocketing. We know the U.S. is plotting against our oil and nuclear sites in hopes of containing huge inflammatory shock. Iran is fully prepared, and we too have many surprises in the store. You know, the battle of the big guys of politics and the battles of elephants should not be encouraged, because really, this will not end well, not only with the fighting parties, but also with us Africans. And it's also a lesson to learn to say, too much dependency can also be a problem, because this economic warfare that is continuing, where the big guys are fighting, it's not only with us, it's not only with the Middle East. And let us not hope it's not only Iran who is going to lose. It's also not going to be U.S. who is going to win, because there is not going to be a winner. We have already seen that this fight, there is not going to be a winner. Whether you change the status quo, whether you change the regime, it's going to be a disaster. And I was listening to the president of EU Commission, especially commenting on the case of Iran. And you really say to say, you know, sometimes we must just stand on one principle. If something is wrong, it's just wrong. Because there is an audio and a video, actually, when he was defending, she was defending Greenland, to say, if Trump enter into Greenland, NATO members are going to unite. There is nothing that's going to happen to Greenland. These people must stand on their own. No country should intervene into another country. Then at the same time, she also stood up and speak about Iran when Operation Epic Fury started, to say people should not shed tears of what's happening in Iran, because these guys funded terrorists and all these things. And you really look at these two views and really say, if we have to get an independent international lawyer, and without looking at who spoke about this, and just analyze these issues and say, in terms of international law, as governed by institutions that people are operating from, who is correct in here and who is right, then you understand that it's about interest. And there is no surprise, because EU is pushing their interests too. Iran is pushing their interests, US is pushing their interests, and when these interests collide, it's where the friends also become enemies. That's why permanent friendship in international affairs is known not to be existing, because if you look at the parties fighting Iran and fighting Israel, some of these guys at one point they were friends, and some of these partners at some point they were enemies. If you go back to history, then you will also be shocked to say, who was the greatest ally, who is now the greatest enemy, and who is at the center. And it's a very interesting diplomacy being played by India. India is selling. When people are fighting, India is trying to leverage, because they know that, when they understand the cost of war, and that giving or leading 1 billion people, and you enter into war, it will be disastrous, because these people need to eat. These people need investment, because with him, he has all the cards. Either he's trading with the US or trading with the BRICS. That's why with him, fighting is not part of his agenda yet. And it's interesting also to see that we may be the same league, but we don't have the same interests. India just want to expand their economy. India just want to feed their people. India has nuclear weapons, but they are not interested in that. I remember there was a time where they have dispute with China. They tried by all means to make sure that, they look at the diplomacy and they find a way. Because with them is trading, with them is business, with them is feeding themselves, and also leveraging on opportunities. That's why you must know yourself. You must know where you come from. And you must know what you want. So let's look at NHP. Then from there, from the House 7, we'll look at my colleague Dwight, and have the conversation of Namibia Investment Guide.
titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe kike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora izatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any
the
of
early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeli, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. It's 30 minutes past the hour of 7. And like I indicated today, we'll be looking at Namibia Investment Guide, especially when I'm going to be in conversation with my colleague Dwight Ling, especially to give us an overview, to give us key components, what is new in the document, and also what are some of the key highlights, especially when it comes to the launch of Namibia Investment Guide. And I was reading through the document. It's a well-summarized document. And also, what is new? What are some of the challenges? Have we moved far? And also, when you speak about investment, really, we're speaking about foreign direct investment. We also speak about domestic investment. And Dwight Links, good morning. And welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Morning, David. And good morning to the listeners on this... I don't know if I can call it a weird Tuesday morning, like a winter morning, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit, the weather is a bit different. Maybe it's what is happening in the Middle East, who knows?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, you know, when the big boys are fighting, is us who are suffering. But yeah, so let us look at investment. Everybody is speaking about money. Everybody is speaking about Namibia, a country with resources. And also everybody is speaking about we must do things differently, especially when we are dealing with, investment. I want you to reflect on what happened on the 2nd of March. At the launch of Namibia Investment Guide, and I want you to give us an overview before we go deep into details. I was reading the document, I was looking at the guide, I was impressed, especially with the content and also the summary. But I want to get an overview. How was the launch, and also what are some of the key highlights that you can say they are different, especially when it comes to investment guide and also the direction of Namibia investment landscape.
Well, David, thank you, and good morning once again to the listeners. So the guides that were unveiled or that were released on that day,
Specifically
were four. They are supposed to be seven, but the other three are still in development.
Yeah.
The four that you highlighted that you had an opportunity to look through.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on certain particular components, like the ability to start up a business or to open up a business in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just get their titles. So you've got starting and operating a business.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is a country profile, which is obviously put together, which is easier for investors to look into.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is about banking and foreign currency regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And the last is based upon the ability of the investment climate, meaning the ability for any business who wants to come to Namibia to understand what investment climate exists here.
Mm-hmm.
But to start off, firstly, David, just from the first set, technically, of your question in terms of, you know, the challenges scenario.
Mm.
One of the guides that was compiled by the local law firm, Cronier and Cronier Incorporated, if I can call him sort of like the business owner of Cronier Incorporated, Mr. Johan Cronier, he was there specifically to present his particular findings regarding opening and operating a business in Namibia.
Yeah.
He said one of his, and I'm quote unquote quoting him directly, for foreign companies, foreign businesses, Namibia is a wonderful destination.
Yeah.
If it's now you and me, David, that go and decide now to start our MSME, it's not the same story that we can talk about. Primarily, it's not as easy to operate things. The other sort of like volumes and their authors, for example, the people from the banking sector or the gentleman that presented the banking sector volume, highlighted, you know, Namibia has a world-class banking system present in Namibia, and, you know, there shouldn't be any particular issues, and that volume was developed by Treasury Suisse, the organization, and their business owner. And primarily that it speaks about things like how money can move. I mean, the outline foreign currency regulations that Namibia adheres to, the banking sector with its relevant laws, it's sort of like a mandate holder, and the various commercial banks as also developmental and sectoral banks in the country. Then you've got the non-banking financial institutions, supervisory and regulatory bodies, and then the foreign currency regulations we have to adhere to. But here's an interesting thing that obviously came out, that the reason why I picked, why I nitpicked these two first perspectives that were presented in the panel discussion was Cronier highlighted a core thing that we've not seen happen since 1990. Sorry about that, David. Since 1990.
Yeah.
Because I'm so used to talking to Albert.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that if you have to look at where did we have, in the established sectors we've got, where did we have new Namibian players come through? For example, in the banking sector. Did we have a new Namibian bank come through?
Do we have,
Bank,
do we have any?
But that was the thing. Mm. We tried with SME Bank, and then SME Bank imploded. We tried, have you seen any competitive and competitive insurance company come through in the Namibian insurance landscape?
I think you read my mind. I wanted, because when I was looking at that guide, there's something that even BON like or is saying to say, Namibia has done well, especially when it comes to financial services. Now I want to understand this aspect. Where are we finding ourselves as Namibians when it comes to us performing very well when it comes to financial services?
Exactly, because you also have to look at the growth of the sectors.
Mm.
I mean, in if you go and look at the first guide that gives you the country profile, the main sectors that are being highlighted is the mining, agriculture, tourism, and retail trade.
Yeah,
and for the whole of 2025, I still remember in the conversations of the home run, how we've highlighted that tourism is probably the easiest sector for any Namibian to get into.
Hmm.
You know, obviously, you know, keeping or sort of like talking in terms of the perfect reality, because obviously the perfect reality demands that you must have access to financing. You must start up with certain particular things, and you must get that sort of like that first sort of like consumer customer engagement. That actually starts paying and then carries over the goodwill and then goes and communicates to five other customers somewhere else that, you know what, David's transport company in the tourism sector is actually the mainstay to go. Mm. And that is one of the sort of like the ice-breaking features that MSMEs actually need and want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go then and look at the particular discussion of this whole particular talk of the investment guide, this is more a showing an outward projection of Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So we are showing outside investors, but in many cases, this should also have been a tool that shows inwards, you know, internally to local investors, hey, listen, if you're trying to find another sector to branch into or to expand into, because, I mean, David, we have to realize that there are something like conglomerates and what's the other word that I've learned in my marketing? It's conglomerates.
It's not multinational, it's basic. what is that?
Okay, so it's two companies, it's two different kinds of examples of companies that expand.
Firstly, it's
a company that expands in its own market and in its own sector.
Yeah.
So let's say if you're mining, in the mining sector, you now buy the transport company that's taking your metal ore or your mineral from the mining site to the smelter.
Mm.
And then you decide to buy the smelter as well. And then you also decide to buy the shipping company at the port.
So
that's not within its own sort of like processes and, you know, maintaining its sort of like its costs in one way.
Mm-hmm.
That would be perceived as a conglomerate.
Okay, let us look at domestic investment. I look at the position of African Union, African countries. They have spoke about domestic investment for a very long time. They are now speaking also about you know, getting funds, even loans from domestic either it's banks or affairs, or businesses. In looking at investment guide in that discussion, because in a few of the conversation which I enter into, even if it's being presented to say when you speak about investment, we also speak about external and domestic. In most cases, the projection is like looking at outside, looking at the guest who is coming from outside. How was that conversation, especially incorporating domestic investment? And are there any other policies which came into place, especially in accommodating domestic investors in Namibia?
So, David, I asked a question in the Q&A after the panel discussion regarding, you know, what does this, how do these guides speak to the problem that the rest of Namibia suffers from?
Yeah.
So the problem that the rest of Namibia suffers from, David, and this is not, this is something that is not even well researched. It's only the Namibia Statistics Agency that has highlighted this through the census mapping exercise that they conducted in 2022 to 2023.
Mm.
So that census mapping, David, outlined what is they went to every town, every region, and every town they go and counted the types of buildings that are there. So they would designate residential, business, and what business, is it private sector business or is it government run business? And then they would identify government buildings and institutions.
Mm.
So you're obviously looking for three things in every town, in every region. That census mapping is highlights, and it doesn't, and if you read it, obviously, it, for its basic exercise, it tells you, you know, just like how many buildings are here and what are these businesses and what they do.
Mm.
But in every summary of the region and of the major towns in every region, you see that government services and government buildings are the most versus private sector buildings and private sector installations. Mm. Secondly, in many of those towns, David, the biggest investor and the biggest employer is the food retail sector of Namibia. So what is the food retail sector? So we're talking about the major food retailers like a ShopRite, like a Woerman, so on and so forth. Those that actively have a footprint. And in a Namibian context, how you actually see development is not, let's say, the road being built or the school being built. You have to look for the private sector's investment into a community. Let's say Divundu, which recently became a village council or a town council.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for picking on Helmut's hometown. But it's sort of like the standard in my discussion.
Okay.
So if you look at Divundu,
yeah.
What does Divundu have to do? So Divundu has to go and install a clinic, a police station, probably a magistrate's courthouse building, what's the other service, and a few other sort of like local authority services that they've got to install.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the private sector sees, oh, Divundu has met these basic standards, then they start buying a piece of land or someone builds a facility for them, like a mall, to say, let's put some shops in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's the biggest investor specifically in Namibia's retail sector? It's the South African retail sector.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, David.
Yeah, I want to speak about the impact, because Namibia, we are not lacking in terms of investors. We have never been lacking in terms of investors. We have been with investors since 1990 or beforehand. Last year we dominated the Greenfield investment platform, and we are number one in Africa and then number two in the world, particularly with oil and gas and other areas too. The question that has always been asked is that are the investors having an obligation to accommodate the Namibians? Because when we speak about, because investment always come with job creation. Was there any discussion related to utilization of Namibian human capital, particularly when it comes to invest in the country?
And that's a big concern, David, because when you look at these investment guides, you're sitting with a question of, even on this one of the country profile, volume one.
Yeah.
In that, what's this, page five, the basic profile of the country, nowhere do they show here labor force.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say it again, David. Nowhere do they show here labor force.
Mm.
And this particular, I think two of the volumes, no, the one, this, yeah, this one specifically was compiled by a economic agency or economic consultancy.
No, there was a graph which I'm also failing to understand. You not talk about the total. I don't know if it was creativity or they miss it. There was a graph on unemployment rate, but it did not come out as it has been presented by NSA. I don't know why.
Oh, are you probably talking about the one where they are talking about the working, the age, the working age scenario, which measures from 15 years.
No, it's the one which is talking about male and female. I think it's that guide one. Is it one?
Yeah.
Yeah. But let us look at that concept of human capital utilization.
Yeah, yeah. So the human capital scenario is one that obviously has a particular, I don't want to call it problematic because it's not problematic, but there is fluidity in there.
Mm.
I mean, for example, the major towns are being highlighted here, specifically like Ludritz or Chicago or Shakati, in Guide 1 with the major regions.
Mm.
But it only takes, six regions?
Mm.
Yeah, six, seven regions out of the 14 regions. And in that regard, the question is, for example, let's take, for example, David, Ludritz is being cited here because of the green investments happening in Ludritz, in and around Ludritz.
Mm.
And, we've spoken enough about that.
Mm.
But who's the administrative capital of Karas? It's Kiertmanshoop.
Mm-hmm.
And Kiertmanshoop is going to, and Kiertmanshoop has always been, in terms of the transport corridor development, Kiertmanshoop always was sort of like your last stop before you either go to South Africa or if you head off to Ludritz.
So that's it.
Now Aus is going to be, is now currently being developed, which is, if you ever seen Aus on your way to Rosh Pina or to Oranjemund, you would not have even seen Aus. David, literally, in the one time that I drove all the way to Rosh Pina and back, there was a signboard saying you are now at Aus, but you never saw where was Aus. Aus had, you could only see the train stop, but you never saw people. Now Aus is going to be fully, is currently fully being developed. It's just like Divundu, it's now going to have, or it has had considerable allocations from the national budget to be scaled up into a slightly larger settlement. That's now an urban settlement, so that the distance between Kiertmanshoop and Ludritz doesn't look that massive, 300 and something kilometers, but you have a midway point before you drive into the Tau Cape National Park, which is the old name of the Sperr, which is the new name of the Sperrgebied, and then from there you reach Ludritz. So that linkage, the human capital, looking past Kiertmans and looking past, for example, Kiertmans' role, and then saying Ludritz is the place to be for transport and logistics, aquaculture, investment opportunity. For sure, yes, they're going to be there, but Kiertmans is still the administrative capital.
Mm-hmm. Okay, lastly, before I want to look at the future and also look at the positive aspect of the guide. What are some of the key things that you can really say we have moved on as a country, especially when it comes to investment, and maybe also to look at what are some of the things that we still did not change? But let us look at the positive side of the guide to say what excites you, what surprised you, especially in looking at that guide and also the discussion and the direction of the government too.
Specifically, David, okay, in terms of surprises, David, I have to be, currently right now, unfortunately, I've read so much that, you would need 5 years to change a certain particular picture in Namibia. So currently right now, in terms of surprises, there's not really none. What I do like, what the guide has, is that the guide fills in certain gaps. For example, that the previous Ministry of Trade and Industrialization, when they launched the trade portal, is that they didn't have these information sets as these guides. The other particular concern is obviously we need to also speak about the human capital value. There is a small piece here, I think on page 14 of the first volume, but which highlights the particular education level of Namibians, male and female. So, and it doesn't look good as well because, I mean, majority of Namibians that are currently operating in the economy have only completed primary education. that operate in the economy. So we're talking about people that are employed, possibly, and then followed after by people that have only finished secondary education. So we've got a huge problem. I've seen this particular disparity since the labor force survey, which obviously you know zooms in on the labor force. And the aim is, David, you cannot do anything without labor.
Yeah.
Because all your investment is based upon humans have to use this, humans have to consume this, humans have to work with it and operate it, and humans have to ultimately be the ultimate beneficiaries of whatever industrial installation you're doing. Mm-hmm. And the concern for Namibia, just on a last note, the concern for Namibia is we have to move away from sectoral-based economic development to human-based economic development, meaning that is what everyone has been calling for. What are Namibians getting? Trickle-down economics doesn't work. It has been proven across the world. What are Namibians getting out of these particular investments? What do we aim to achieve?
Yes, Dwight, lastly, just any other point that you think we have missed, and just 2 minutes.
In terms of the scenario, David, of local businesses, I mean, all of us have dreams about starting a, you know, our own local business in one way or another. It's always the fear of the market. Where do you get the market? I mean, David, I can bake food. I can cook myself as a guy. You know, it shouldn't be easy to try and open up a restaurant somewhere. But what is the biggest concerns? You always need, in terms of business development, you need a adequate distribution spot, and you need to have access to a market. And those are the two particular conundrums that always suffer in Namibia. Small businesses try to start something. They try to last for at least 6 months. And then you just see when you walk past there and 6 months later, the business is no longer there. Finally, there really needs to be an impetus primarily about the development of business environment in Namibia. And Mr. Cronier from Cronier Incorporated highlighted a very good point. The investment climate is very welcoming to a major corporation, a big player, or an established business since 1990, which are all the big Namibian corporates. But if you are now someone new, David, just ask yourself these pivotal questions. Why haven't we seen a new brewing company, Namibian brewing company, in 1990? There might have been attempts, but they died quickly. Why haven't we seen a new dairy company in Namibia? There might have been attempts, but it died quickly. Why haven't we seen new banking and so on and so forth?
No, the bank disappeared.
Well, that one was neighbor. That one was with government impetus.
No,
so,
okay, Dwight, thank you, Ne. Thank you for
not a problem.
That input.
Yeah, that is the conversation to say, why are we not growing if we continue feeding ourselves? Why are we not growing if we continue, you know, giving ourselves better meals? And who is the problem? Why are Namibian businesses not expanding beyond the limited zone? Why are we just within one cap that we have been there since 1990? And if you want to provoke people, just ask how many Namibians so far are real into real business, oil and gas, straight operating in that sector, or mining sector, operating in that sector, owning a mine. It's still a dream in Namibia, somebody own a mine, a Namibian. It's still a dream having a Namibian bank. We have tried SME, we don't know what happened. It disappear finito. We don't know if it's a competition, if it's our inability to operate the bank. We do not know. And that should not only scare you, it should give us an opportunity to ask critical questions to say, why Namibia is a very beautiful place for, I don't want to call foreigners, but somebody who is coming from outside, why we are so accommodative to our guests? Why our children are suffering. We know it's an African thing to say a guest must be treated with respect, but doesn't mean that we should not eat when we are accommodating guests. So we'll continue the conversation after Credit Express.
When life starts squeezing me like a lemon, I know what to do.
With Express Credit's Easy Payday Loans, you can get up to 9,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes. Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Yeah, that was a discussion from, Investment Guide. And my colleague Dwight Link has attended the event. And the question is always very clear to say, what is new? What is new? And he said there is no surprise in the document. You know, the best thing we can do in Namibia right now, we may want to change the laws, we may want to refine the laws, but had we implemented what we already have, we could have still gone far. If we are still implementing what you have already planned, we are still going to go far. The problem is that there is no coherence. We are still not implementing what you said we are going to do. And the document is very clear. And the concern, you should also be able to understand that currently as you are speaking, the Namibian working force is dominated by the unskilled, the less trained, and the semi-skilled. Those who are educated are able, are capable, are not the one who are in Namibia working force. Why is it like that? Ask yourself that question. What is the strategy of accommodating the best into the system? Because the system will naturally reproduce itself if you have the best accommodated by the system. Because currently, as you are speaking, you may think it's a joke. Look at the statistics. The majority of the Namibians are the one who are working are the one with grade 10 and grade 12 qualifications. If you start from a diploma to a degree, then you start having a very serious problem. Why is it like that? Because if we understand what is the cause of that, then you find the solutions. And the issue of domestic businesses has been addressed, has been discussed actually in public-private sector forum to say, let us remove bottleneck. And I'm very happy with what the president has done, especially giving a directive. And I think directive will do more than we are conducting a study, or we are still revising that we need a policy, because executive directive is important. The president gave an indication to say there will be a one-stop-and-shop now, and that stop-and-shop will be when you are doing a business, the one-stop-shop at the BIPA, you find everything there. We have understood. And you know, when I was at, there was a time we went to BIPA, and there was a presentation, a very good presentation from the chief executive officer and also the management regarding how the business has moved so far, and also looking at some of the works, especially from the previous year. One of the questions I have asked is that There was always a thing about we have done well in terms of numbers. It's the same with graduation, to say, as a university, you have produced these thousands of graduates, but where are your graduates? What are they doing? But I've asked a question because the presentation was indicated to say, in terms of business registration in Namibia, they stated that over the review period, 13,000 new business entities were registered or expanding. They were registered in Namibia, and the currently registered business in Namibia, they are at 242,473 registered entities. And my question has always been at the sustainability and the impact, to say numbers may look good, but how many of these businesses are operational, are profitable, are sustainable? How many are getting assistance? How many are getting, or is just a register to have it in the system? But what is the sustainability of a registered business? Because if you have this, if you just look at this number, 242,473,
registered businesses. In the next 5 years, you expect this registered business to move from their cap of, categorization to the next level. You expect them to move away from where? From the incubation center to open competitive market. But how are they going to move away from this, incubation center? Is when they get support. But a well-established foreign business, when it comes to Namibia, they make more money, more billions of dollars in Namibia, because to them it's free. The legal framework is so accommodative to external businesses than to domestic businesses. But how are we going to grow the country? If the Minister of Finance is saying, no, guys, we have repaid our Eurobond, and we have understood that not now, we are going to look at our domestic investment. Who is going to give you money from domestic investment if you are not giving these people money to expand? So that is a conversation, especially moving forward. And also the aspect of having a document and having a policy to say, what have we done over the past 12 months or 10 months or even a year? Especially in making sure that the Namibia business environment is conducive, particularly regarding the laws that are being done. Parliament, what is Parliament doing about our businesses? What is the legal framework? What is Parliament guidance? And also, when are the bills going to come out? Because there are still more to come out. There are still more. Because if you look at the guideline, you also be able to see and identify and observe and point out and note down the indication that some of the policies are still being reviewed. The question is that is going to go through, or we are going to wait for 2020 or 2030. So let us look at a short commercial break. And you can still engage us at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. And looking at how things are being done, what we say and what we do. Because they are really Namibians, and I've seen a lot of young people who have registered businesses and with brilliant ideas, but they are not moving. Not really because they are not hardworking. Things just become so tough to them. They spend 80% of their time on compliance than making money. When they make that little profit, they spend another 80% of their time in compliance. It's like you have committed the crime when you start a business in Namibia, because you have to go through all those scrutiny. You have to be squeezed. And people are not free. That's why there is always a saying to say, please let Namibian smaller businesses operate and grow. Because if they don't grow, it's going to become a disaster. The free trade area is going to be a disaster. I'm telling you, it's going to be a disaster if we are not having muscles even to survive. How can you survive African continental free trade area if we cannot survive our own domestic market? Good morning, and how are you?
Yes, Mr. David Shombe, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Chief?
No, I'm very well. Thank you very much.
What is your contribution? What is your contribution today?
Let's start with the link between the nowadays, especially when it comes to business and investment.
Yeah.
And the political spheres.
Yeah.
First of all, let me start with a little bit of history. You know, I'm not gonna go deeper into it.
No, history is necessary. History is today.
Yes. And let's say that's where most of our leaders, especially politicians, are failing to connect the link between politics.
Yeah.
Investment,
mm-hmm.
Investment which includes businesses,
yeah,
And now the overall development, how does it affect the people on the ground? Because what is more necessary is the people on the ground. Because if you are saying you have invested, Namibia has been invested, or people from abroad or people from the inside have invested in Namibian businesses.
Yeah.
Then how does it reflect on the people on the ground? To the people on the ground.
It's a very good question, that one.
How are they benefiting? Okay, first of all, the framework that we have given by the colonialism doesn't allow us to prosper much in business. This one, someone should prove me wrong. With most of black people's businesses, I included. I'm not being tribalist or what. The day the owner of the business dies, that business is not going to survive for a very long time.
It's a death of business. No, you are right. You are right. You are right.
Because we are taught to believe that money is everything. But Mr. David Shombe, even if it's you today, if I give you, let's say, roughly 10 million today.
Yeah.
Mr. David Shombe, this is your 10 million.
Yeah.
It's you, see how you do, you go about it. It's yours. Many people, to be honest with you, they might not be able to use that 10 million so that it can sustain at least, maybe let's say, 5% of the population of Namibia. Number two, the generation to come.
Just your kids. Don't go far. Just look at your kids going to feel that you hate the money.
the kids of your kids.
Yeah, are they going to feel it?
In most cases, they are not going to.
It's a very good observation. Then what are we doing wrong? Is it really our policies or ourselves also? Because it must be really looked at, because something must be done, especially with domestic businesses and also domestic investment. Is it really apartheid? Is it really the politics, or there is also a role that we play as citizens, especially in the way we do business in Namibia?
Both. First of all, the framework.
Yeah.
Secondly, the apartheid.
Yeah.
That doctrine, it requires for us to learn and unlearn so that we can start doing better. Because what is important, most people, even when they are business, when they are in business, where we fail, we only save our own interest. Because what you are aiming for, we are only aiming for us to become millionaires. And then after, when we become millionaires, what happens? If I ask you, I'm not going to mention people's names, but the majority of people who are having money in Namibia, how is it reflecting to the people on the ground? Those people, if the person is rich, the person is already rich himself, but he's not enriching others. But what is important here, Mr. David Shombe, is to enrich others. That's my point.
Yeah, uplifting others, yeah.
Uplifting others. When you are enriching others, you are uplifting them.
Yeah.
And then it means you are reinvesting in the people.
Yeah.
And the people can take the business forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do also better. When the economy is doing better, who are the most affected people? It's the business people.
Indeed.
When the economy is doing good, who are the most affected people?
The business people.
It's the business people.
Now let me
go back to the education.
Yeah.
Our government should start telling us the truth. The people in parliament.
Okay.
It's becoming more serious now.
Okay.
Because the day I decided I'm not going to belong to any political party, I love all the political parties in Namibia.
Yeah.
But do you know where the problem comes?
Yeah. Just hold on. We're going to short commercial break. Just stay on the line.
No problem.
A Eshi wataloka umeko embelo taveli pulanga helipi ngengo vamo no wewe ya kofikola no 10th gen iPad ipopo ya dimoshi paket. Top score instant. Oyaita kwefindano talishambula lo kushuna kofikola mondo maeveja vaino milongo mbali na hamano. Opauni ngo mfindani wakamweko mo iPad aveli vahetatu ovo tavaka findanwa ilo mano kavaucha kwa ipumbi wa fikola yungushu ya dola eo vili mwe dana mibia oshipu ne ngono lando kashako oko KG mwe ele KKG dilimbali ko top score instant. Oku jamo fitola keshe moshi longwa shishe ndeto SMS o shicha instant. Totumu kombali oneveli vatatu nombali efi afanueli otali kulmo milongo natu nali mwe amarija mondo maeveja vaino milongo mpali na hamano e mangono malandula fanu odo dino kulandurwa. Top score, a proud product of Namibi Mills.
Yes, let's continue.
Okay, let me just take about 1.5 minutes because I'm looking at time. I want to give a chance to others.
Okay.
Okay, when we get donors, the government should tell us the truth that these donors are coming with conditions. They should make it public. These are the conditions that are coming with these donors.
Yeah.
Can we go ahead? Are you happy with them? Or should we revoke? Or should we end with the donors?
I hear you.
Look at what is happening. Back then, a few years ago, we were given some donors from Europe. But when these donors, they were what was attached was human rights, the LGBTQ. But I'm not going to touch on the LGBTQ. What I want not to touch on today is the kids. Morals at school. Our kids are ill disciplined because of the direct influence of the government. Direct influence of the government, because I'm not saying human rights is wrong. It's not wrong.
Given
this framework, but the government is failing the link between how is a teacher supposed to discipline a child. If you are saying no more corporal punishment. Corporal punishment is not needed. But for instance, if you say the learner, when the learner, how do a learner interact with a teacher?
Yeah.
My final conclusion is you are not going to build a country with ill-disciplined people. If these kids in education that we are training today in education, I'm not a teacher by profession.
Yeah.
But I feel pity for those that are teaching right now, because these kids are not going to build anything if they are not disciplined.
Indeed. So thank you very much. You made a very important point, especially with donors. Really, people don't speak about that, because you know why can't you have a ground? Because there is always a moral compromise and money, and people don't really speak about this. But things are manifesting. It's a good thing that you diplomatically said about that. But really, why should you compromise your moral ground for finance and something that you don't defend in public? You know, you must be very clear to say, this is where we are standing. This is what we want. And, why are you doing this? This is what our people want. Honestly, it's like, we can move away from human rights. It's like I'm saying, my people are hungry, but you are giving me clothes. Why should you not give me food? Because we know exactly what you want, but the projects that are coming are not corresponding to what you want. Do you understand what I mean?
I'm not corresponding, because
we are not even prioritizing it. I don't know about that, but honestly, it's a good thing that you mentioned about it, but let's see what will happen in 2026, especially those who will be speaking on our behalf to say, in terms of strings attached, if something is compromising Namibia, and you are betraying the country like that, you know that.
Yes.
Yeah, if we send somebody to represent us, we know we send you to get water. You cannot come with whiskey.
Exactly.
Yeah, so thank you, Ne. You said you are in Otapi.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm in Otapi, but my last point is, if you see these conditions that we are given, softly but slowly, they are bridging the gap between the government and the people. What is happening is, I mean, what I want to emphasize here is, if the collective of Namibians, most of us, if you take the whole Namibia and put it in one hall, and then you say, you ask the people, is the government of Namibia doing good? I don't think the majority of the people are going to keep their heads down. They will raise up the hands because those Europeans, they want also the people to hit the government so that when they come and penetrate between the government and the people, they will get a local because they know what they've been doing back then. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, that is from Mutapi. You know, if we send you, go get us water, we are saying in Namibia, we have high rate of unemployment. When we send you to represent our country, your principle number one, how do you solve Namibia with unemployment? Number two, how do you expand the Namibian economy from 2.7% or 2.8% that was the growth of last year to at least 6% that make us comfortable and expand our economy? Other things are not our priority. We send you water, you come with whiskey. Yes, it's in a liquid form, but that is not what we want. That is why it's always important to be very clear. And you mentioned a very important point to say, when there is a proposal being given, it's good to come to the public. Because what we have seen between Zambia, Zimbabwe, and international donors, they say, no. We like the money. We want the money. But it's not only that we must be very careful, but this money that you are giving us are compromising our sovereignty. Yes, we want investment, but what is the impact of investment with ordinary people? Because we are in a desperate situation. People, they just give you numbers, billions of billions invested in Namibia. But is this reflecting on the dignity of a human being? Because other than that, there will be like countries that we don't even want to mention. Because other countries, they played their card very well to say, you invest in me, I invest in you. You use our resources, you also include us. You don't touch our resources, you also don't touch us. But other than that, we have a long way to go. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are things going?
No, we thank God.
Yeah, it's a very good thing.
For a new day.
Today, are you not outside? Are you already back?
I'm back, man.
Oh, you are well disciplined. I want to be like you one day also.
You are also, because maybe the time that you are doing that, that's when you are now giving your program, because
yeah.
I do listen to it when I'm in that, that part.
No, it's really a very good, I think, you should join Happy at the weekend program, especially when it comes to fitness.
Yeah, because you have told us that it's one of the cure.
Yeah.
To really, and for me, it's compulsory because if I don't do that, I might just become sick. Maybe due to fatigue and other issues. I don't know how I pick up that culture, but it helps me a lot.
No, you live long. So...
Oh. We play soccer with these young boys.
Oh, you dribble them.
I could see the difference. They always say, watch. I say, please, go back, or go in front. I say, oh, guys.
Oh. No, it's a very, very good thing because they say a sharp mind and a sharp body, they go hand in hand.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you for Dwight today to give us that local guide.
Yeah.
To attract a global investor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was also looking at that document.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that, yes, it has got some good aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
In it. But now, like Dwight said, there is that way that he mentioned, he used that promulgation.
Yeah.
I always have a problem of pronouncing it.
Yeah.
But I think that means also has to do with the integrated kind of businesses.
Yeah.
Now, those ones, they are buying businesses, they are doing these things. They do that in many businesses. But you know, when you now talk about politics.
Yeah.
Politics, I think, is the foundation of most of the areas, most of these sectors. So because politics is an administration, actually.
Mm-hmm.
wants me to say, whether it's a political economy or whatever. So this is the, most of all those things are anchored to that pillar.
Yeah.
So therefore, even if they come up with the policies or laws or whatever, it has to do with the political administration. That's what I think on my side, because you cannot talk economy without policies and all these directives and other areas. They have to be liberated.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be, you know, framed in that scope.
Mm-hmm.
So now, this local guide, since you have also mentioned that, yes, Namibia is the one that is topping in terms of attraction of the investment.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when it comes to the local in the area where we have, we might not have, because they were also talking about this trickle, the benefit that trickled down to the last man there.
Mm.
Are they benefiting really felt or enjoyed?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if we can really organize it well in that group, so people can combine their skills or their efforts to venture into that area.
Indeed.
I'm not so sure whether our people, whether we are taking it up to those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guides now, that include also some kind of security, some kind of, local tourism.
Mm-hmm.
When they come here, they shouldn't just end.
Mm.
Because I know if they end up in Karahari or whatever hotel there in those lodges.
Yeah.
So one can say, yes, the benefit can trickle down, but maybe it might be more than that if we really establish some kind of establishment of this local tourist camps and circumstances and things like that.
Indeed.
Maybe it will benefit us more. Because the cars that people use, they do hire them from those rental companies.
Indeed.
Car rental companies. But on our side, do we also have some blacks, Namibians?
It's a question I wanted to ask, to say who owned those companies, but we can discuss that another day. Time is not on our side.
No problem. So I think for me, I can just end up here now.
Yeah.
To say that let's take up those opportunity if they emerge, because they are actually emerging.
Thank you.
Despite the fact that there's war in the Middle East.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mkombwana. Thank you to everybody who called. And also, that is a conversation. It's 58 minutes past the hour of 7. And we have less than 1 minute before we give the mic to the big mic to unpack the day. And, you know, let us read. The problem is that we don't read. Let us read so that when you approach something, we have good content, because some of the information, they are hidden there. Yeah, those who are very intelligent and wise, they use those documents, and it can be used against you. It can be used to win you in the competition. If you don't read, it's always very important to read. And there's something which I really wanted to say. You know, there is a case in Mpsati where one woman was killed by an elephant. And it's really a bad thing which have happened, especially when it comes to human and wildlife conflict. But the other thing is also incidents that I think we need to be very careful with wild animals. And the one thing that we also maybe bring about is the aspect of saying, maybe we also do not know our own wildlife. Because once a dangerous animal come into the village, it become an excitement.
There was also an incident of somebody who was almost killed by a crocodiles, because when something dangerous come into our village, we start to want to see what is really happening and to take this thing on TikTok. But Israel is also telling us a lot to say. Maybe we should also build that good relationship, especially with what is ours. We do not have that relationship. There are people still who do not know, who did not even maybe see a giraffe. They have just seen it on the newspaper or maybe on TV. But once something comes, it becomes so dangerous, and it was an unfortunate thing, especially looking at what have happened. But once may really want to see and also look at that aspect of human and wildlife conflict to say sometimes we really need to be careful, but we also need to have a knowledge on know-how, because you cannot blame a person. Maybe a person did not know of the danger of that wild animals. It becomes an excitement. Once you see in this current world, once you see a springbok, some people, they have just seen them on TV. But I think it's something that we really need to be cautious about, especially when it comes to human and wildlife conflict. But in that aspect, that will bring us to the end of our conversation. I'll leave you in the good hands of the big mic to unpack the day. And we'll send the mic to Ondangwa. From me, David Shombe. Bye-bye for now. See you around in Shap Shap.